Well, I am back from my brief hiatus. I was had to do a pre-recorded show on Monday and Tuesday. Some of you may have noticed. Others don't care. But anyway, I was tied up with my grandson. I took a couple days off. He's been visiting over his spring break, and we've been riding bicycles and playing golf, and we started to go fishing, but we got rained out yesterday, so couldn't do that. But it's been a good trip, good trip for me, except my calf muscles hurt. We've been playing basketball, too. You know, I'm not bad for a 65-year-old. I still got game, as they say, and can drill my 13-year-old grandson at the game of 21 or around the world, your play around the world. Now, he gets me at horse occasionally, but around the world, he just can't seem to get around the world, and Pop-Pop can. So I had a weird thing happen on Monday this week. I had to go to the Farm and Garden store where they sell the brand of lawnmower that I ride, and I had to buy some equipment stuff, and I walk in. I'm standing there in the middle of the store, and by golly, there was an incident. Let me ask you something. How do you respond to someone who is accosting you verbally? You know, I guess it does depend on where you are when it happens, you know, what the conditions are. Are you able to be the calm one, or do you let their anger ignite your anger? You know, I realize everybody has their limits, but I do respect people who are able to keep their cool, because that was not always me. You know, when the other person goes off like a bottle rocket, sometimes it's hard when the insults are being hurled at you. It happened to me Monday. I was at a retail store, which I was telling you about, the lawn and garden store, and a man saw me who obviously had a bone to pick with me. And there were only a few customers in the store and a couple of employees, and this guy called me by name and then approached me and got close enough to make me feel uncomfortable, and then started berating me for something that I supposedly did to him 4 or 5 years ago. Now, as hard as I tried and under a certain degree of stress, I could not recall what he was referring to, but he kept saying, "Oh, you remember what you did," even though I did not. Now, there was a time when I would have invited him outside to settle matters, but I'm not that same person anymore, mentally or physically. So I chose to apologize for whatever offense I had done to him, and, you know, was able to just kind of step away from the situation. I walked outside to calm myself down, and he walked out and passed me on the way to the car, and he actually said, "Bye, Lenny Lawson," as he left. Well, I stood outside the store speaking to the owner and talking about how people act sometimes, and, you know, his employees saw this happen, and what you should do about it. And he congratulated me on keeping my cool, and he said that he thought that I handled the situation well. Well, not 5 minutes later, the gentleman who had created the scene returned. He parked. He got out of his car, and I looked at the store owner, and I said, "Well, he's either here to shoot me or to apologize." And I just waited as he approached, and he did apologize. He said that he had no right to talk to me like that and should not have done it. He had left for about 5 to 10 minutes and thought about it, I guess, and decided to come back. And I'm glad he did. We ended up shaking hands and moving on with life. I think apologizing was something that he needed to do for himself. You know, who knows? Maybe his venting towards me relieves something in him. I don't know. I just feel like God put me in that place at that time for a reason, and it was an experience that I did not enjoy. But in the end, you know, I felt better about it. It did haunt me the rest of the day, you know, just thinking about what ifs. But, you know, you really can't do that, and I'm glad that he got peace of mind. I hope he did. And I do now, knowing what it was. I finally did remember what the incident was, and it was a situation, not of my creation. I'm not going to say anything else about that. I just I believe that there's a lot of anger in the world right now, and there's a lot of people that go off on just the slightest thing. I've always looked at that as something my dad taught me about an emotional bank account. So every time you do something good, every time that you, maybe do somebody a favor or you're nice to somebody or maybe give them really good service or something, you build up a positive balance in their emotional bank account. Now, when you screw up, or you maybe just don't do as well as you normally do, or maybe you don't look at them the right way or whatever, something offends them, then you make a withdrawal, but you don't go below zero. You know, just as you screw up, you make withdrawals. As you do good things, you make deposits. What happens when you get below, is you get underwater with somebody, then you're not on a very good emotional level with them. That's when people tend to really not cut you any slack and tend to go off, don't you think? And so I think the key in all of our relationships is try to stay in the positive. Try to make good deposits. And that includes the people in our household, our customers, our employees. I've found that, if I can solve a problem with a customer and bring them in and calm down the situation, then I have a better chance of keeping that customer's business. Unfortunately, in the car business, people get really emotional about their cars. It is so important to our lifestyles. People have to get where they want to go, and they don't like, I've heard over the years that women feel like they are abused in a service department because they think that the service advisors or technicians think they don't know anything, and, it's insulting to them, and they think they talk down to them. And I've heard those types of complaints, and I just encourage my service advisors, to consider who you're talking to, when you are advising somebody. Watch the terminology. Don't use so many acronyms. Explain to people. Try to get a feeling for what their level of knowledge is about a car, and then explain to them about what's going on. Just don't tell them they need new pads. Ma'am, you need new pads on your car. Well, what's a pad? Tell her. If she doesn't understand what that is, just show her. Use pictures or whatever. So we have some tools that we use to be able to explain things like tire wear and what causes it. We have some point-of-sale displays that help do that. So it's important to get down or up on somebody's level. Some people may be insulted because they feel like they know a whole lot more than you're giving them credit for. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge in just about any business. I mean, I've seen people flip out at McDonald's before because, they got a pickle and they didn't want one. And there's no reason for that. But it's usually not that. I used to listen to Zig Ziglar a lot, and he would say, he had this analogy about a person that was in their house, and they were walking down the hallway, and here comes the cat, and they're just mad, and they stumble on the cat, and they turn around and kick the cat down the hallway. And he used that as an analogy. When somebody goes off, he'd look at him and says, "Have you been kicking your cat?" And I use that sometimes. Or has somebody been kicking your cat? Is somebody getting under your skin? If they are, find out why and see what you can do about it rather than creating a scene. That was embarrassing for me, and it was embarrassing for everybody that was around me. There were two customers that I saw in there. I looked at one of them, and I said, "This is awkward, isn't it?" I mean, I was just at a loss for words. It's been a long time since I've been attacked like that. And, the last time was probably on a basketball court because I might have been playing a little bit too rough. Who knows? But, I'm too old for that stuff now, and life's too short to have to put up with people who just feel like they got to go off. I just don't understand it. But anyway, it's over. And I'm glad. I'm going to take my first break, and I'll be back here in just a second. Okay, we're back. Hey, let me ask you a question. How close does somebody have to get to you, behind you, like you're driving down the road and somebody's supposedly tailgating? When is it tailgating to you? To me, if I can't see their headlights, they're tailgating. And, if I'm going like 50, 60 miles an hour down the interstate at 70 miles an hour, and I can just barely see their taillights. I mean, I'm sorry, if I can barely see their headlights, if I saw their taillights, they would be in a world of hurt. But if they are, if I can just barely see their headlights, then they're tailgating. You know, the old rule, I think it's 10, let's see, one car length for every 10 miles per hour. Would you agree with that? So if you're going 70 miles an hour, they should be seven car lengths. I don't know how you would measure that visually, but, you know, you can probably get close. People follow too close, and it creates anger, right? You get frustrated, and it's dangerous. I mean, there's no way somebody could react quick enough if they're following too closely. It, you know, creates a lot of accidents. You know, Nissan and Ford now have automatic braking on their vehicles so that, you know, if somebody does stop in front of you, the car is going to slam on the brakes whether you're paying attention or not. You still may be too close to them. Maybe the car doesn't react quick enough either, you know, as far as the sensors are concerned. But there are definitely different kinds of drivers out there on the road. The first type they identify in this article is the speeder. They're always going too fast. They're always driving over the limitations of the road and the limitations of their abilities. You know, not many people have been to driving school at Road Atlanta, but a lot of people drive like they have. And, you know, and it's not just limited to men either, ladies. I think there are a lot of ladies that absolutely do the same thing. They overdrive their abilities. And I really believe that speeding is a habit. I don't think it's just, I mean, I've driven way too fast before, like when I'm in a hurry to get to, you know, my parents' house or something for some situation or whatever. I mean, I can get it on down the road. I learned. I was 16 once and 18 once and 25 once. But, yeah, when I'm on an open road, curvy road, and I, you know, it's just great driving conditions. I mean, I'll probably drive a little bit too aggressively. But I'm not careless, though. I don't risk other people's lives when I'm doing that. Just mine. But the speeder always seems to be in a hurry. They always seem to leave late, and even when they're not in a hurry, they're driving too fast. Watch out for those speeders, because they're the ones that tend to tailgate as well and get mad, you know, if you're blocking their way. They want you out of the fast lane. You don't belong there. Move over. And they're always in the fast lane, though. You notice how a lot of the cars, I mean, the fast lane has become the slow lane in some cases because everybody thinks they own the fast lane. You know what that lane is supposed to be for? That's right. It's for passing. If you're not passing somebody, you're supposed to be in the right-hand lane. So if you're listening to this radio show right now and you're not passing somebody, then move over. Get in the right-hand lane. If you were on the Autobahn in Germany, you would get run over by a Mercedes going 120 miles an hour if you are in the left lane. Yeah, that's right. They do drive on the correct side of the road, the left lane in a double-lane road or a four-lane road. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, the next kind of driver, the student driver. They call the student driver anybody who is an inexperienced driver. So the young person, the new driver, the one who's the driver's ed student or the I don't know, 15-year-old that's got the learner's permit, and dad's trying to get him to be careful and use their turn signal and do all this stuff. My driver's ed teacher was Herb Hawks. He was he was also my basketball coach at Greenville High School. He had a golf ball on a tee that resided on the top of his dash inside this little bubble, and he could actually push the top of the bubble down, and it would reset the golf ball on the tee anytime you knocked it off by driving too aggressively, like around a curve or braking or accelerating too aggressively. That golf ball would fall off that tee. And he would mark you down or give you a demerit, I guess, or deduction every time that you knocked the ball off the tee. So that really taught you how to be a smooth driver, and I thought it was a good idea. He was a better driver's ed coach than he was a basketball. No, I'm not saying that. He was a good basketball coach. Had a good record. I liked him. Anyway, student drivers are, you know, they need leeway. I guess it's a shame that a lot of people that are new drivers or old drivers don't have a sign that goes on the top of their car. Look out for this person. Remember the baby on board sign? I really never knew what that meant. That mean that I can't pass you? Does that mean that I'm, you know, I need to be nicer when I drive by you? I don't understand a baby on board. Maybe you're just proud that you have a baby on board. I don't know. How about the angry driver? We've all seen those. Those are the people that flip you off and you don't know why. You know, you just thought you were just making a left-hand turn. You didn't mean to, you know, destroy their day. Angry drivers, probably in a bad mood when they got up that morning. Somebody kicked their cat, right? And so they just, they express their anger with a 4,000-pound car. Not a good thing. These are also the people that are liable to pull over and spring out of their car and want to get into fisticuffs. And they are just not, they shouldn't be on the road. If you're in a bad mood, take a two-lane private drive. Don't get out there where there's other humans, because you might create an incident. You might accost somebody at a farm and garden store. Anyway, another type of driver that they identify is the multitasker. We've seen them. We've gotten behind them. They're on their cell phone. They're texting. They're doing other things. They're eating, putting on makeup. They're arguing with the kids in the back seat, or reaching back to smack them. No, you shouldn't do that. But anyway, these are people that are distracted. And, you know, anybody can be distracted by anything. I've been driving down a road before, and all of a sudden I decide I'm going to change the radio station. And then all of a sudden, shoot, I need to look back at the road. Have you ever done that? Now, how long have I been looking at that radio? That was so irresponsible of me. You know, when you're driving a car, you should be driving the car and focused on that, not on everything else. You know, it is illegal in the state of Tennessee to use a handheld cell phone in your car when you're driving. But I think that law lasted about 2 days. Well, I think you can still maybe get pulled over for doing it, but I haven't seen. I don't know. I'd like for a law enforcement person to enlighten me on what's going on there, because I'm seeing people waving all, or just weaving all over the road again, and being on their phones. And, or, you know, at night you'll see just that they'll be looking down and there's a glow on their face, and they've got the phone in their lap, maybe so the police can't see it. But you can, and you are the victim of them if they happen to come over in your lane. Another identified person is the weaver. If traffic isn't moving fast enough for them, their first reaction is to change lanes before giving it time to pick up. In fact, rarely do they spend more than a few miles in a single lane. They're constantly weaving in and out of traffic. It's hazardous to both themselves and everyone around them. You know, I kind of associate this with the impatient driver, the angry driver. You know, I am an impatient person. I mean, I work at it. I try not to be. I don't want to be impatient, but, you know, I don't like waiting in lines. If I see the line more than like four cars long at Powell's, I'm going elsewhere. I just cannot. And I think that's gotten worse the older that I've gotten, but I recognize it. Aren't you proud of me? Another kind of driver they identify is the best kind of driver, and that's the defensive driver. That's what we were taught to be, right, in driver's education, is be a defensive driver. Always be ready to avoid any of these other people who are erratic drivers, who are tailgaters, who are angry, who are students. You know, they're speeders. You see these behaviors, you know, and many times don't we want to react to that? Don't we want to show them? I'll race them to the next red light. I'll show them who's faster. That's a bad move. And, of course, you're the one that gets the speeding ticket, right? You know, and just ignoring all of the different signs that we have out there. Signs are meant to be. Do you remember that song, Signs, Signs, Everywhere a Sign, blocking up the scenery, breaking my mind? Is that what it was? Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign? That was a song from the 50s or 60s. I think it was the 60s. I remember that. Yeah, but defensive drivers are the safest drivers. They're the people who understand, you know, two hands on the steering wheel, 10 and 2 o'clock, eyes on the road, don't use your cell phone. They drive the speed limit, or maybe 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, but they don't push the limits. They stop at stop signs. They don't hit the gas when the light turns yellow. You know, they go ahead and hit the brakes, and then the speeder behind them gets mad. We can all do better at this, and I thought this might be a slight reminder to all of us to maybe try a little bit harder and fall into the sixth category as a defensive driver. I'll be back in just a second. Okay, well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. Tomorrow, I'm going to be really diving deep into electric vehicles and some of the new technology that's coming down the road that just might make this not such a bad thing for everybody. Yes, it's going to be expensive, but there are going to be a lot of good choices out there for every budget. And hopefully they'll figure out a way to finance them long enough to where we can afford to make the payments. Wouldn't that be a great thing? If I can help you in any way, don't hesitate to call me, 423-552-2020. Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru, and I will see you tomorrow.